Good evening and welcome to everybody who's here tonight to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Judy and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Judy.
For those of you who care to join us, let's open our meeting tonight with the Serenity Prayer. We'll just take a minute and then we'll say the Serenity Prayer together, okay? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Thank you. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to everybody that's here tonight. These premises are not smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, and they're located across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'm now going to read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes, and our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So for tonight, as we do every week, the format of this meeting is an open, big book self-study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic and sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we are discussing the first part of step 8 and 9. And we have our panel with us tonight who came from Gloucester. I think that deserves applause. So joining us tonight is CB and Phyllis, and they'll tell you all a little bit about themselves before they begin. Basically, I'm going to read different segments out of the book, and then they'll comment on that. So,
do you want to, by way, just go do some introductions, and then I'll read?
Okay.
Yeah, just introduce yourselves, where your home group is, and...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Sure.
I'm Phyllis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Phyllis.
My home group is the Fellowship of the Spirit group in Gloucester, Virginia. We meet at Abingdon Episcopal Church on Route 17. We have a meeting on Saturday night. It's a speaker meeting, and some of you may get asked to be a speaker there. Could happen really soon, too, and, like in about an hour. Anyway, and also we have a Wednesday meeting, beginner, and then big book. And my sobriety date is April 15th, 1982, and of course, the usual suspects. I have a sponsor, and as I've been directed here to carry the message to others, I'm blessed to be a sponsor to other people, and I guess that's the basics there. So,
okay. Hi, my name is C.B. Peterson, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, C.B.
And my sobriety date is the 28th of October, 1987. For that, I'm very, very grateful. And so are a lot of other people. My home group is a Sunday night Live and Grow in Gloucester. It's at the Ware Episcopal Church, and it meets at 7 o'clock on Sunday nights. It's a closed meeting. I sort of have another one, but I only vote at the Sunday night, but if any women are in Gloucester on a Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, there's a great women's meeting at White Marsh Baptist also. So we just became a home group. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Oh, wait, and I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I sponsor people.
Great. Thank you very much for doing that. Okay, so now you know a little bit about these two ladies, and you know where to find them. So those are the two most important things you need to know about people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when you're in trouble, you need to find those people, your people, who are going to help you. So we're going to go on tonight. We're going to start on page 76. And again, this is steps 8 and 9. And the steps 8 and 9, 8 is made a list of all the persons we had harmed, and you're going to make amends to them all. And then in 9, you actually do the process of making the amends. So on page 76, we begin that now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we've harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol.
CB, would you like to start?
I'd love to. I'm still CB now. I'm still an alcoholic. When I transferred the list over from my resentment list and all those other people that I didn't really resent but that I owed amends to, it was quite overwhelming. My sponsor said, before you do any of this, you have to pray for the willingness to be willing to do it, number one. And you have to put yourself up number one on the list, because you cannot ask somebody to forgive you if you're not willing to forgive yourself. And for me, that was really, really difficult. I just hated myself when I got here. I had broken all my own promises, my dreams. I like to say that alcohol stole my soul. I didn't like what I saw in the mirror every morning, and my first sponsor, when I got out of treatment, I had a little recipe card, and it said, CB, I love you. That was the worst. I kind of go like this when I brush my teeth, and I had to say that every morning. And so when we got to these steps, I did the best I could with the first 7. I wanted to bleed all over everybody right away to get them off my case, you know, and I had no idea that I have to be sincerely sorry, look them in the eye, and then say, what is it I can do to make it better? So she just put the brakes and the kibosh on me for that one, and she said, wait a minute, you know, let's do your family first. So the ones that I could do were my kids and the ex-husband. I was firmly convinced until I did the 4th step that the reason I drank so much, that I had been fine until I got married for the 4th time and moved to Kona. And if I hadn't married him, who was going to solve all my problems and take care of me, don't ever make drunk choices about marriages, trust me. Anyhow, I was wanting to blame him for everything. I was incapable of taking responsibilities for my own actions. And by doing step 4, when she said, this is your 4th step, not his, I was able, for the very first time, although I'd spent oodles of money on time masters, psychologists, psychiatrists, life after S, laugh at yourself, laugh at the universe, to find out what was wrong with me, I never realized that all these things happened because I was a hopeless drunk. And so I did the best I could. My kids were great in the beginning. They just said, well, Mom, don't do it again. What happened was, until I moved to the Big Island, the last 4 years were the worst. I always drank heavily. I didn't start till I was 30. And I had a lot of fun. I love to drink. I absolutely love to drink. I love to get high. I love the taste of vodka. I love the taste of anything but gin. And then one day it turned on me, but it didn't happen until my older 4 kids were off at college, so they didn't think I was that bad. In fact, my oldest son is still convinced it was the people I ran around with Little did he know I was the ringleader. So that went pretty well. It was very difficult for me to do the ex-husband because by the time I got sober, we had no relationship. We couldn't stand each other. And so she would have me, I'm sure most of you have been sponsored, have been referred to page 552 in the big book, which says to pray for the person for everything you want for yourself. I said, I don't want anything for him. And this is what she said, well, then pray for the son of a bitch. I thought that was really smart. My sponsor said that to me. So I did. It took a little more than 2 weeks. But I was able to try and live the amend. I have a friend, he's an attorney, and it was a classic example. He got sober about 8 months after I did, came in, was having multi-affairs, wanted to get the heat off, told his wife, and she sent him to the couch, and they ended up being divorced. And because he couldn't wait, he was doing it to get the bad feelings off himself, and he didn't care who he hurt. So it's really important to have your sponsor, as it was for me, go through and help me bit by bit. Start with these easier ones first, and then when you see that nobody did slam the door on me, but I have to always pray to be willing to go to any lengths, and that to me took a lot of praying. I had cataract surgery recently, and I have to wear these to see. I made a little note, but I guess that I'll talk about that later and pass to Phyllis.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, CB. well, let's see. My work with the steps, specifically as outlined in the book, actually started at about 10 years of sobriety. I had done the steps and amends in my earlier sobriety, which took place on the West Coast. I got sober in a large home group with a lot of support in many, many areas. I crawled into a group after trying to do it myself for a couple of years. I don't know if any of you have done that, you know, kind of like show up at meetings early and show up at meetings late, leave early, you know, don't want to get involved with these people, we're not sure about this yet, and not drinking, as the wonderful Bob D has pointed out, if any of you were in the workshop. He's has such a message for new folks, the kind of thing that I heard after about 2 years of trying to do this without really doing what we do here. I was feeling very suicidal, and I just randomly wound up at a meeting where this person, Clancy, was talking, and he said a lot of the things that Bob Darrell talked about the condition that we have inside, the feelings that we have, and the inability to live with those feelings and emotions and our spiritual malady. And so while I wasn't planning on drinking, I was kind of thinking about suicide. And so I'm listening to this gentleman talk about how he took some simple actions, and they weren't quite as detailed about the steps and so on in that group, but there was a lot going on there with actual ego reduction and service and doing the steps. But at 10 years, my sponsor went through a real bad situation, and one of her friends had done a more detailed big book experience like we're talking about, and she went through the book, and she said it saved her husband's life, her ex-husband. she asked me if I was interested, and I was just about ready to move away from California to Ohio, and was wondering, you know, how am I, you know, there's not going to be a big group there with all these people that I know and all the activities and everything. What am I going to do? And it just sort of fell in my lap. Well, let's do the steps. You know, we're going to start in the beginning, and we're going to, you know, when it says pray, we pray. When it says do this, we do this. When it says write, we write. And so we launched out on that adventure. And so what happened was I was given the gift of a way to just have me and another person and the big book, and I could do what we're told is our mission here in order to stay sober, to do the steps and then carry that message to someone else. So I had a nice way to do it, a track to run on, and I was gaining some experience. It took a while. I've done this several times, and so I have several different waves of doing the amends. So let's see. One of the things I want to say in this paragraph, we'll kind of get to some other things here, but the list, so in my case, I needed to have a sponsor kind of help me sort the list, look at the harms, you know, clarify. It says, you know, we have a list of persons we have harmed. Well, in my case, I needed to figure out what harm I did. You know, did I insult somebody a little, or did I really, you know, was this like something that is amends worthy? Is this a real harm that I need to make amends for? And in my case, I actually found it useful to do, some of you have maybe heard about using the little cards, you know, and writing stuff on cards. That helped me, because I tend to stumble around when I'm extemporaneously, especially, you know, like, who wants to call somebody up and go, hey, you want to hear how I did this to you? And so I can try to make it right. I mean, that's a little awkward. So having the thing written out very clearly was helpful. And then having someone, you know, prayerfully, being in that kind of prayerful space of, you know, we're going to do this, as it says in here, you know, we're trying to fit ourselves to be of service to other people. So it's not about me just going and kind of, you know, I was younger, single, and I've definitely had the amends, like, you know, the guy that I dated a few times or something, you know, come up to you and being, hey, I need to make amends for how I acted when I was dating you. You know, and I think I did this and this and this, and I'm sorry, bye. You know, and thinking, well, I'm glad you did that, you know, but this is a whole other, you know, kind of like, and I'm not blaming that person. I mean, I didn't know any better either, but definitely not doing this without having taken ourselves through the process to where there's a lot of change, a lot of what they discuss in the book in the earlier part where Bill made the observation that his friends roots grasped a new soil. You know, that's what we're about, is being in that new soil and acting according to that. And so it's not about me going and quickly relieving myself of a burden. This is a whole other attitude towards life and my role in it. And that's been the miracle for me, was to have that experience. And I'll talk a little bit more later about some of the things that happened because of that in my past.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, we're still on page 76. The next paragraph we're reading starts, probably, there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we've hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not, and probably should not, emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
All right. I wanted to say, too, that when I was not real keen on making the amend, I had to do the spiritually fit thing, too, and then I had to just do it. I was unable to apologize to my parents. Both of them had died. I was drunk when they died. I didn't care about my father. I had no relationship with him. But my mom, I really did, and my grandmother. Poor thing, had to watch my mother be an alcoholic and then me. But my sponsor had me write letters to them and telling them everything I liked in the relationship, sort of like I had to do face-to-face with somebody. I liked about them and everything I didn't like about them in the relationship. This is in the letter. You can't do that on the other. But I also had to list everything I liked about myself in the relationship and everything I didn't like. And then we burned it down at the ocean's edge and threw some flowers in the water and let the water wash out everything. And that was very, very healing for me. I had to change my behavior. It's one thing for me to come and say, God, I'm just so sorry, I'm really sorry, but I had to show by my actions that I was really, truly sorry. The worst thing that I was doing at the time was having an affair with a really good friend's husband, who I used to blame for taking advantage of me, but when I drank, but that was bullshit because I was a willing participant and I could justify anything when I drank. You don't want to live your life like that because in my sober moments, it would just eat me up. So that was one of the amends. I couldn't go to her, but I changed my behavior. The other thing was to change my behavior at home and at work. I'd like to say, well, I never stole anything, but you know, I was a thief of time. I would show up drunk and you wouldn't get my full attention. I would show the people that I sold. For some reason, I was able to be successful selling real estate drunk out of my brains all the time. It never occurred to me that I was using the company car to take their clients around. And I know there's a loving God because I never got to an accident then. I'll get to what happened with the accident later on. But so I had to participate at work. I had to show up early and stay late. I had to change my behavior at home. I had to listen. When my children, there was one child at home, I had to drive the carpool sober. I mean, I drove all over Kona drunk as a skunk with kids in the car. That was terrible, and that was one of the things I had to change right away. I mean, why didn't... Anyway, I know there's a God because I didn't get busted then. So I had to change that behavior. Everybody waited in my family for the shoe to drop. You know, when is she going to do it again? Because I had made all these promises for years. I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry. I'll never do this again. And I do it the next morning. So all my good intentions fell by the wayside the minute I woke up. When my eyes were open, I was drunk. I drank around the clock. So the best part that I can think of as an example was when, at the end of my drinking, I loved Puccini operas. And I used to let all my ironing accumulate, and then I'd play Puccini. I'd have a bottle of vodka on the end of the ironing board, and I'd listen to Puccini and cry and iron. So I'm sober 6 months. I have Puccini on. I'm ironing away. No vodka bottle now. I'm sober, and I can hear the ex-husband coming up the stairs going, "Oh, you know," because he thought I was drunk. And I wasn't, but that was the old behavior. You know, they're so used to it. And I wanted everybody to, I had forgiven myself, mind you. I had a relationship with God, and I wanted everybody to forgive me immediately. And it didn't happen that way. But my behavior was continuing to change because I was starting to lead my life based on a spiritual experience. And I was definitely trying to stay connected and to be the person that I think my higher power wanted me to be, which I wasn't able to pull off. So the living amends were very important to me because I still practically call my sponsor every day, all these years later, and the sponsor I had at the time, I was on the phone with her maybe 3 times a day. How am I going to act? What am I going to do? And she'd say, well, really, the best thing you can do is not act the way, any way at all, the way you used to. Because that'll put you in good stead. So I had to do that, and I had to always remember the amend is for me to stand up with God behind me and do whatever is necessary to make right with the wrongs that I had caused. And there's a great feeling when people forgive you, which I'll get to in the next paragraph, because it really is kind of exciting when you think that the worst is going to happen and they end up forgiving you the first try. And Ruth used to tell me too, they hurt you the first time. You don't want to grovel about this. I mean, I was really one sorry woman, I can tell you. But I started living the amend, and it felt really good. That was one of the, I think there are many triumphant arches through which we pass to freedom. And that was the beginning of that feeling of I'm free. I don't have to look anymore or wonder. You know, piecing the conversation together when somebody would call me, I didn't want them to know that I was in a blackout, so I'd have to try and, by what they'd say to me, figure out who I'd left with, what I'd said, how many clothes I left with. You know, it was just like mine. I don't have to do that anymore, and that's part of it, too. I mean, I'm old now, I don't do that shit anymore, but I used to.
That's true.
Oh, gosh.
All right. So.
What to say?
Oh, gosh. So, this is a paragraph with a lot in it, and I keep being reminded of how much all of this has to do with becoming a person among people, you know, like that, I forget what that phrase is, but like a worker among workers. You've all heard that phrase. Like, I was always trying to pull things to me, to fix me, to put a barrier between me and other people, to protect me from harm, to protect me from fear, to protect me from inferior feelings, just always fixing it. And essentially, that's the inventory information there, what I was doing that was harming others because of my ego and my trying to get things to fix me. And I always felt like I was pretty innocent. I was just this well-meaning person who just was so sensitive and so, you know, I on the inside, I felt like everybody else got the book on how to do everything. And here I am, this poor little, you know, if you could visualize me, I was like a Jerry Lewis kid emotionally, you know, like I want people to know that, you know, I've got this bum leg that I'm kind of dragging behind me, you know, like life is just harder for me, you know. And so internally, if not externally, my excuse was always, it's harder for me. And so maybe not overtly, but always thinking that people should give me a break and they should feel sorry for me maybe too. Meanwhile, I am, you know, running around a little bit, doing things I shouldn't be doing, because deep down inside, I'm just feeling worthless and like nothing like that's ever going to work for me. And I'm scared to death of commitments of any sort, and so on and so on. So lots of harm out of all that. And they're talking about the approach here, like we don't need to go in there and get, you know, be all. And I think maybe when I was newer, it might have been more of a temptation to kind of, you know, like, you're that, like, on fire, you know, God has saved me and God rescued me and, you know, you should do this too. And so it's good, their admonishment here, to not kind of go in there like a preacher, you know, like we're going to save your soul. This is about being right-sized and about just trying to think of the other's welfare. What a concept, you know, like really think about what I'm doing and how I'm doing it from now on, and starting by making amends and trying to live differently. So some of my amends were more of the let's just don't be a burden on society and try to avoid doing the rules, you know, like let's just follow the rules. Vote, pay your taxes, do things on time, do what you said you would do when you said you would do it. Just those basics. And I needed some help with that when I came around. So one reason I chose the group I was in, because they were very much all about that type of thing. And I was running with a crowd who had those goals too. That was hugely helpful. So let's see. Sincere desire to right the wrong. My main problem in doing the amends, once I had them written down, like CB was talking about, was the dread of talking to the folks about it. It says further down here about how we think about what we're going to do with folks before we do it. Mine were done, some were done right away, some there was some timing involved. And I felt like I had a good enough relationship with my sponsor that it was okay to take the time and to just sense maybe when the time was right. Some people didn't answer my calls, and we decided that 3 messages left for somebody was probably enough, you know, and that I had to have some other way of making amends if they weren't going to answer the phone. I had one where I waited. I can't explain it, but it was very embarrassing. It had to do with me doing something in business with a friend of mine, and both of us kind of fell down in how we dealt with things in this relationship. And her end kind of went ballistic with a boyfriend, getting a lawyer, and I got very insulted by all this, and so I just withdrew my old pattern, you know, just shut down and leave and go away. So it was going to be real embarrassing, but I called, and it had been a while, and I don't know, it was at least a year, I think, since I had written this down on this card. So I call, and, well, first of all, the internet finally had resulted in something like white pages, so I could look up the phone number. So that was awesome. So I get the phone number, and I call, and she answers the phone, which is pretty amazing, on the first ring. And then B, you know, I kind of launch into my little talk, and I say what I was about, and I think the amount of money that we had in dispute is about this amount, and I'm willing to pay you this. Now, that took a little bit of willingness, too. You know, like, we're talking about over $1,500 here. And I was thinking, you know, what they always, the old classic line, you know, they don't want your money, they want their money, right? But it doesn't always feel like that. But anyway, so now I'm finally willing. I'm willing. And I'm willing to humiliate myself. I'm willing to pay the money. I'm willing to make the call. I'm willing to ask what it would take. She answers the phone, and I give her my talk. And she says, you know, I really think this is great what you're doing. And I get it. I really get it. She says, I really don't want the money or need it. But if you need to, like, give it to a charity or something like that, that's cool. And I said, well, okay. Having talked about all this, and I regret that, you know, I just kind of ran away and all that kind of stuff. I said, so what can I do to make it right? And she said, well, about an hour ago, I got a letter from my husband that he wants a divorce. And I'll tell you what you can do. You could be my friend. Hmm. So it was pretty amazing. Anyway, I'm kind of sold on this stuff. I've got another example. We'll pass back, but it's pretty incredible.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God when it will serve any good purpose. We're willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Okay, you know, I don't know really there was anybody I really ever hated in my life. My mother used to say you can dislike somebody intensely, but you don't hate them. And, but I, except for the ex-husband who I disliked intensely. The rest of the earlier ex-husbands were okay. I wasn't married to them very long, but this one was hard. But we've taken care of him. But I have, the beauty of this program is the first time that I made an amend where I thought I was unjustly accused, it was to my ex-brother-in-law, and it changed our relationship because we were all camping and they had some fishing poles that were lost, and he blamed my children who were in college and home for the summer for taking his 9-year-old kid's fishing pole, which they didn't do. And at the time it happened, I gave him some smart-ass answer about what the judge never lost anything or what. Anyhow, so I go to call him, and I call up because I needed to make an apology. And I said, Jerome, I'm in this program which makes it necessary for me to apologize. I couldn't even finish what I wanted to say. All he heard was apologize. He said, oh, that's okay. And he was my friend here at forever after. That was the first one that, besides my kids, that really came home, you know. And when I got divorced, he said, you'll always be my sister-in-law, you know, we'll stand up for you if you need anything. All because I was willing to apologize from my mouth. But the big ones for me was, I was in a car wreck caused by me where I hit a woman who was 9 months pregnant. And I knew that I had to make the amend to her. And so when I first started out on this, we did think the amends I can make right now, the amends that I have to make that can be postponed, and the ones that If God chooses to put these people in my life, I'm willing to make the amends. Sometimes I wrote a letter and didn't send it. You know, this is all with daily contact with my sponsor. So the first thing that happened was 5 months after the car accident, there was a little mom and pop store on the way home. I lived in the country that had one gas pump, and their name was Como. And the name of the woman I hit was Como. And I had tried to find her somewhat. I used to stop joggers up in the, I lived in the coffee land, and people would be jogging on the road, and I asked, are you Sandra Como? No. And I'll use that as a last name, okay, because it's an anonymous program, and you'll find out why. But, so there was this Como store. So every time I went in there for about 5 years, I knew they were going to call me on hitting their son and daughter in this car wreck. And they never did. So I went to a wedding, and I'm sitting out by the swimming pool, and Mr. Como comes up to me, and I'm quaking. Now, it's been 5 years, and I still haven't been able to find his daughter. So he said, oh, hi, Cynthia, can I get you a beer? And I said, oh, Mr. Como, I haven't had a drink since I hit your son and your son in the car accident. He goes, I don't have a son. I had the wrong family. For 5 years, I had put myself through the tortures of the damned. Instead of going right away and saying, gee, I'm really sorry, you know? I mean, I knew they were going to get me. And it was, I mean, all that for naught. So it was a classic example for me to go ahead and do it as soon as you can. So meantime, for 7 years now, I've tried to find this woman. And we were coming back from the Big Island Bash. In fact, I think it was the year Bob Darrow spoke. And we were looking to downsize. And I went into an open house. And when I went in the kitchen, there was a woman and a teenage girl sitting there. And I introduced myself and my husband, and the woman said, there's a flyer on the counter. And when I turned, I heard the daughter say, Mom, is that her? And I knew. And I asked her name, and it was the woman that I'd hit. And I burst into tears. I said, I am so sorry. I've been trying to find you for 7 years to say how very, very sorry I am. She said, and meantime, I'd been sued unbeknownst to me. I had no idea until my insurance rate went up that they sued me, and the insurance company, this is more the grace of God, settled on them. And I never knew about it for 3 years till my rates went up, because had I known, I would have put myself under a bridge sober. But, you know, I would have, my script would have been I'd lost everything. So she said, just a minute. And she reached into her purse and she pulled out, I had 7 years in, she pulled out an 8-year chip. Not only was she a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, she didn't go to meetings, but we had the same sponsor. And my sponsor, with me bleeding all over her about this, trying to find her, never said a word. And she showed me her chip, and then she hugged me, and she forgave me. Because I was able to say, in almost taking your life, I was able to save my own was saved. And I've never had another drink since that night. So, I mean, that, if you have any hesitation ever about making an amend, that would be it. And the last one was 9 years into my sobriety. I thought I had done something terrible to my sister. And that was the last. My prom card would have been full, free, whatever. And so I went to visit her, and I got her, and I apologized to her for what I thought I had done. She said, what are you, crazy? That never happened. I must have dreamed it drunk. But, so for nine years, I had carried that around. You know, I hadn't seen her. She lived in Kentucky. I lived in Hawaii. So it's just the most freeing, wonderful thing. And I am to stay out of the results. You know, as long as I keep my side of the street clear, it doesn't matter what they do. I would like it if everybody thought I was wonderful and loved me, you know, but that isn't always the case. But then I have a 10th step to brush up nowadays on what I've missed in that step. But it was so freeing. Thank you.
Thanks, CB. Okay, so Phyllis, alcoholic. And so let's see, how do we approach? I really didn't have any experiences where someone read me the Riot Act, but I had to be prepared for that. And there, you do hear stories about where that happens. And I don't know that that will ever happen for me in some future time, but that can be a very painful experience. But a lot of the stories I hear, like what CB has talked about, are they're not just, it's really not about me feeling better. I probably will, but it isn't about that. It's about healing with other human beings. And I've heard such amazing stories. Like one friend of mine, some shenanigans when they were little, you know, that were inappropriate, that he was a little bit older than her. And so they talked about it. And he was able to get free from the idea that how he had treated his sister had made her into an alcoholic. You know, it's like he got free. Her making amends to him, he got free from a lifetime of guilt. Amazing stuff. So my the next one I want to talk about. So I'm 10 years sober when I'm doing the book in detail. Now, my experience is I got a lot of freedom in my first 10 years, a lot of surrenders, a lot of great stuff, a lot of shifting around from it's all about me and what I can get, what I can do to make me feel better, to relying on a higher power. And it's not like I just looked around and said, well, I want to be like the cool kids, although I did. It was horrible pain. You know, like, who surrenders unless they have to, right? I don't know, maybe you do, but I didn't. So lots of that and lots of growth from that. But one of the things that I have experienced is, because I, in the first 10 years, I had never done an inventory in the column form. And so doing that, I felt like, wow, so many things that I've had nagging in my mind that I just didn't really realize even are in there. You know, these things that just seem like the way life is. You know, that's just the way life is. That's the way I am. And having the opportunity to not be stuck in life. I was 10 years sober thinking, well, this is kind of it. You know, you're 10 years sober. You're on your way to being an old timer. And it just pretty much stays the same and okay, whatever. But no, you know, it's like there's always the opportunity for more growth, more awareness, more deeper experience of a higher power and truth and being more true to following that path. And that's what it has meant for me. So I'm kind of all sold on it. And it happens to be my career, so I'm a little salesy every now and then. I'm a newcomer, and I can't, but, you know, it's like, yeah, this is awesome. So anyway, what happened for me, I'm 10 years sober, and I did the inventory, find this resentment about my mom. How weird is this? I'm 10 years sober and I still have a resentment towards my mom. It's just the saddest little thing. She didn't love me the way she loved the other kids. Isn't that sad? You know, saddest story you ever heard. Poor little me. And I had a list of stupid little stuff that meant that. You know, just idiot, you know, just the dumbest stuff you can imagine. But I was so hurt by that as a child. I was so sensitive and I was so hurt. Anyway, but so what I did, again, is put up a wall and decide that's how it is. And so I'm an alcoholic. I'm not calling you. I'm not writing you. You know, you're not going to like me anyway. So, you know. And but it wasn't openly like that. It was just I was hiding. And so anyway, so I make amends and I find out that and working with my sponsor on the Roots New Soil thing. So the new soil for me was that my job was not to try and get stuff. And having had the experiences in my first 10 years of trying to, like, get okay from men, you know, I had this, like, dark night of the soul thing where it just broke open for me. And I didn't need that anymore. And I just relied on my higher power. And I was in deep peace, just utterly deep peace. And a few months later, I met my husband. You know, I was like, I'm fine. I'm really fine. Like it says in 12 and 12, maybe someone will be single for the rest of their life. And you're thinking, but I hope not. You know, I can accept it. But you will. Okay. You know, so it's not like God was my pimp kind of thing, but it was kind of like, it's no longer in my hands. You know, my phrase with my husband when he was calling me for dates was, let go and let Tom. You know, like, don't follow up. Do you like me? Do you like me? Do you like me? Do you like me? Or the implied, do you like me? You know, it's just like, you know what? I'm going to be okay if he doesn't. It'll hurt, but I'll be all right. So anyway, but what this comes from is that it's not my job to go out there all day and get stuff for me. My job is to be of service to my fellow human beings. Well, guess what? I can do that in my family, too. A little contention in our family, step family. My mother tries to be a mom to everybody. She erases the lines. It's not that they're stepkids. They're her kids. Cool. So she raised one of the children of my youngest sister, stepsister. And those, the other two siblings, didn't like that sister. They're mad at her. There's another story along with that, because eventually the brother got in the program and forgave her and a bunch of other things rippling around. But anyway, so there's kind of like this thing of, my mom has raised this other kid, and what about all the other nieces and nephews? Why is this kid more special, you know? And why at my wedding does this kid have to even participate? I don't even know who she is. You know, I've been in California for a decade and a half, you know. Why does my mom even want her to, like, oh, can you have her, like, sign the, you know, be at the registry? You know, because I've got my blood sister and my niece in the wedding with me. And what, don't care about that kid. So when I'm talking to my sponsor about this, it's like, okay, so your job now is to treat that young lady like she's a, you know, your niece, and like you care, and like she's a valued member of the family. And I began to see how much my mother got from having her in her life, and how much that it was okay, because no longer, given this process, was it important for my mother to do anything, say anything, be anything to me, because I didn't need it. It would be nice, but I didn't need it, because it's no longer my job to be scanning the horizon to see what I'm getting, and is it measuring up with everybody else, and, you know, am I getting my share? No longer. No more pie. It's all about artesian well of love coming out to them, not what I'm getting from them. So with that happening, then I could go make an amends to my mom. She told me that, and see, my thing was, she was always so involved with the other one, she didn't care about me. Well, she told me about a time when they didn't have my phone number or address, and they came looking for me. And I didn't know that. Anyway, so my thing was, I used to jerk her chain all the time. Like, I'm not going to call her. I'll just wait till she calls me. I'll make her worry about me. And so what we decided for the amends was that I would call her every week. And somehow in that process, it's like that all my life, I never felt that close to her. I always wanted to, but I didn't. And it was just removed. You know, that wall was just removed. And now we're like buddies. You know, we're like they say in Forrest Gump, we're peas and carrots. And, you know, she just always says to me, you know, you're the one that calls me all the time, and don't quit doing it. Keep doing it. And anyway, this whole process can restore us to close, intimate relationship with other people and a part in society that's functioning. And instead of being a taker, we can become a giver. And this is kind of like the step on that road, you know, of actually repairing the ones where they don't see us like that. and we haven't been like that. And anyway, so that's my experience there. I'll pass.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to jump down to the last section on 79 to wrap up tonight, and then we'll just share with us your final comments for the evening. Okay, on page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
Okay, I'll make this quick. I think the wonderful thing about the big book is that the instructions are there. If you read the black part, the instructions are always in the book about how to do each of the steps. And when I read this by myself before my sponsor sat down with me line by line, I had a different take on it. And you can't mess it up if you follow the instructions, CB, and I did. The only other thing I wanted to add is that what happens now for me is I don't have to go in there and defend myself anymore. The same sister wrote a book, and she ripped me a new one in the book. And what I wanted to say was, you left home when you were 17. You left me there to take care of everything. But what I realized through the grace of God is that was her take on it. you know, that was her experience with our upbringing. I stuck around and was able to forgive my mother and be helpful to her. She didn't drive. So I would get phone calls from Colorado and even my husband, how do you still speak to her after what you did to her? And I was able, through working the steps in there, and not to have to defend myself. I know what happened. I don't have to make anybody think anything anymore, because I know what happened. So I never said a word. Well, we're like this now. She thinks I'm the best thing since sliced bread because I never criticized her. And it was great for me, too, not to be able to criticize her and to realize through that, you know, I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore. Nobody's after me. And there's so much peace in that, the peace of doing the steps and being able to catch myself or run it by a sponsor if I think I'm off base, which does happen. It's better to say nothing. That's what I've learned. When in doubt, don't say a word, CB. You'll have to apologize later. And I'm married to an alcoholic, and I get to practice this. I can do it out here very easily. It's when it's at home that I sometimes need a lot of prayer. But I feel like everything I learned in my life, I learned through Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am just so grateful for that and for also for you all having me here. Thank you.
Thanks. I got to watch the time here. Okay. So I think I'm just going to say... that people who have shared their experience with me about how frightened they were to make their amends, like it says here, you know, that we pray to be given the strength and direction to do the right thing no matter the consequences. I have not, knock on wood so far, suffered some very profound consequences the way some people have, but I've also heard the stories where they were afraid they would and then they didn't, and they almost are funny, some of them, you know. But all that is very inspiring. This is totally something that I couldn't do by myself. So I guess I would say the gift is that we share this experience with each other. And I just, it's like there is no price. It's just a priceless thing that we have. And I too am very grateful for that pass.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Okay, we're going to go ahead and pass these baskets tonight for... The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While these contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. So we're going to take announcements now. I would take them from the floor, and then we have one for our group. Anybody on the floor tonight that would like to make an announcement about an AA-related event?
It's actually not AA, but I would like to ride back, if I could, to the Naval Air Station along with my flight.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
I have one real
yes,
quick.
Yes, ma'am.
Since we're here, there is going to be a retreat/workshop, which is for women. And it's going to be in Richmond the last weekend in April. They have a clever little name for it. They call it Femme Thoughts. Thoughts is Fellowship of the Spirit. So it's a great thing. If any of you heard Val, who was here, she'll be there, and some other great women that will be doing workshops in the night and the day. I believe it's like the Friday and Saturday, but it's the last weekend of April. If I can give you some information after the meeting if you're interested, and I'm sure that at some point you'll probably get some flyers.
My name is Dono. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dono.
The Freedom Big Book and Freedom 12 and 12, which is one of the oldest novel meetings, they have purchased the Bill Wilson movie from GSO about how the traditions were formed, and they're showing it on May the 16th in the church social hall. They're in Third Presbyterian Church, which is right in between Carlton and anyway, it's on Carlton, which is three blocks off of Little Creek Road, make a left on Little Creek Road on Carlton, and it's three blocks down on the left. It's in the social hall between Pythian and Carlton. And they're going to have homemade popcorn with coconut oil in it. And Milk Duds and Peanuts. And last year they had the Bill Wilson movie of how Bill Wilson started AA and when he was in the hospital and the room lit up and how it all started in 1934. So this is the same, this is Bill Wilson himself. So it's the 16th of May at that church and it's going to be really awesome. Everybody's welcome all over the world.
All right, thank you very much. And then right here in this room on May 18th, we will have our supper and a speaker, which we always do at the conclusion of the 12 steps. We start at 6 o'clock with the potluck supper and 7 o'clock with our meeting. And we have a friend from Richmond, Virginia, Justin, going to come and speak, share a story with us. Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see any of our group members. If you would, raise your hands. Newcomers. We do want to make sure that you don't leave here tonight without a meeting list, phone numbers, and some contact from us. So to facilitate that, if you wouldn't mind letting us know if you're here for the very first time or if you're under 30 days, we would really like just to get to know you. Is there anybody that wants to introduce themselves tonight? Yes, sir.
My name is Devin Rothpollock from this meeting and in the area.
Hi, Devin. Hi, Devin. Hi, Chair. Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Laura.
Hey,
Laura. Glad you're here.
Welcome.
Hi,
Laura. Glad you're here.
Hi, Pam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Pam.
Hey,
hey, welcome. Glad you're here.
I'm an alcoholic, and I'm Tom.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tom.
Welcome.
My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay. Welcome.
Glad you're here.
I'm Daniel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Daniel. Hey, Daniel. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Very good. Okay. We do have the literature table over here to the right, and we do sell big books if you're in need of that, or even if you don't think you're in need of it, you may be, so it's there. And we do have, we believe in sponsorship in AA, and we particularly in this group support that idea. We do have that two people that are going to come up to the front and talk to you about the practical aspects of doing that. And these two people actually do have sponsors and work with them, so they do have good information to share. And that would be Jason and BJ, right here, will be sharing tonight. Do we have a hand in the back of the room there? No? Okay. And sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you not to delay with that. Anyone who's willing to be a sponsor, would you please raise your hand? And again, if you have questions about sponsorship, these two folks will be up in the front of the room. Smokers, please use the bug can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings, so everything you heard tonight, you can listen to again, as well as seeing our upcoming events. They're on our website, simpleactions.net. So thank you, ladies, very much for being here tonight. Questions, and please do come up and thank the speakers tonight. They did drive a long way to be with us. Thanks for everybody being here and for cleaning up. And who's our volunteer to read page 164?
I'll do it.
Would you come up to the front of the room, please?
Sure. Oh, I can see it. I just have to hold it like this.
Okay. You're on.
My name is Dono. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dono.
Last two paragraphs of 164, it says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man or woman who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us
We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you shall surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you. So everybody that would like to join us, we close with the Lord's Prayer.
Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us.